explain the name of the series, the so-and-so series, it has several reasons why I kept it. One of them is a poem by Wallace Stevens, so I'm going to read that. I'm ripping this off from Rob Arnold's pre-reading from Emerson Lore. At least in my mind, it's Lore. So this one's called So-and-So Reclining on Her Couch. On her side, reclining on her elbow, this mechanism, this apparition, suppose we call it projection A. She floats in air at the level of the eye, completely anonymous, born, as she was, at 21, without lineage or language, only the curving of her hip as motionless gesture, eyes dripping blue, so much to learn. If just above her head there hung, suspended in air, the slightest crown of Gothic prong and practic bright, the suspension, as in solid space, the suspending hand withdrawn, would be an invisible gesture. Let this be called projection B. To get at the thing without gestures is to get at it as idea. She floats in a contention, the flux between the thing as idea and the idea as thing. She is half who made her. This is the final projection, C. The arrangement contains the desire of the artist, but one confides in what has no concealed creator. One walks easily the unpainted shore, accepts the world as anything but sculpture. Goodbye, Mrs. Papadopoulos, and thanks. Rob Arnold is managing editor of Plowshares and editor of the online literary journal Memorias. His poetry has appeared in Natural Bridge, and he has been awarded a Somerville Arts Council grant. Rob Arnold.
Thank you all for coming out on this truly miserable night. I'm going to read a bunch of unpublished, really crappy love poems that I've written. They're all kind of related. They're all untitled, or rather they go by the same title, which is called Ghost Poem. And I haven't decided if I'm going to read the actual title of the poem over and over again, like I've done in the past, but I guess I might. All right. And the only thing you really need to know is they revolve around a character from the Odyssey, whose name is Nausicaa. I'm going to mispronounce this over and over again this evening, so I hope you're prepared. Ghost poem. Sweet melancholy, scent of a girl I knew. How we turned our mouths into gateways, specters of possibility, into openings. How we opened ourselves and took something in. A world of severance, world of eyes. I long to unfold her ribs and take her from inside. Ghost poem. At the entry to the woods, no entry. As the sleepless coincide with the waking, as the engine of dawn begins to low our names in susurrus tongues, to the knotted spires, the animal crust where dark begets dark, and trees collide, blistered, beckoning in intervals that mimic the heart. Nausicaa, your wounds that tasted sweet. Copper. Ghost poem. When the glass tide falls back and dark pours into your fold, we'll bear your love like blood keels through veins made rich from ache or longing, him, only him, subset of shadow, sharpened to its delicate edge, sail thin and ready to lead you over the striped water to that nexus called home. Nausicaa, please pulse, voice that becomes your body. Ghost poem. Nights eyeing the crease in your nape, wanting for char and ink, for profiles and shade, Nausicaa, to draw you, young, childlike on the beachhead. Curled naked, lost to the wintering tribe you call your own. If I grow dim, it's the beasts come to claim us. I confuse things in their pearlescence. Every man surrendered is a man sown to his elemental skin, is a severance of body from body, salt from the substance of blood, blood from our spectral release. Ghost poem. How many nights have I swept your name in the earth? Nausicaa, remember me this way. my body gathered over yours, birches spiriting us, though vaporous, though scattered, filamentary, though altered, figuring loam and smoothed bone, I touch your face, I press you close, I make you stone. Ghost poem. Sometimes a bell rings, sometimes a hand disappears. The ocean, like an engine of wants, straining its pitch over the vascular rock, the fish rot and miasma, the heat escaping our mouths, how we tremble here, where soldiers come back, unbodied, drained of purpose, and the tremolo of wind through dune grass, fog within fog, touch and the absence of touch. Ghost poem. Whereby a heart afloat in a dusky field would billow, seeping its aura to the cool aortal blush, as bird chatter, then something in the distance goes hush. As our forms rupture into a spray of air, and we collect our heat like a gift that I would pass to you, Nausicaa, your hand, my hand, the ditch we fallow within until our fleshes yield, grasses close over our thirsting, a prayer that leads us out through the dark where sparrows miss. Ghost poem. There was a reef of brightness. There was a traveler. A field freshening, like the skin on your temple I'll never touch. There was something moist, something hazing down, through the curve our backs would make, Nausicaa, Nausicaa, just once in my palm, a curly hair. Ghost poem. Ask me to relinquish you, ask me to perish. Render you agent to the shroud, to distend or engender you. On a walk alone through the ciliate street, I unmask you, Nausicaa. Every woman and nun, unveil this altered world and reveal you my mundanity. No tide, no field, no immortality blooming from our mouths, no voice from beyond, nor voices at all. Nausicaa, no Nausicaa, the poems betray us, we are nothing without. Ghost poem. The tides wash your body back to me, in its drapery of weeds, the indeterminacy of where you ended, the sea's antecedent, where it began degrading your stillness. I hate the gulls rafting above, or scrabbling for filth in the sand. The tides wash your body into a string of words. The sea shifts, you become another line.
Lisa Gabbard attended Rice University, where she studied linguistics and cognitive science. In 2005, she received her MFA from Emerson College. Her poems and prose have been published or are forthcoming in journals including Lit, Hangman, Real Poetic, Redivider, Shampoo, the GW Review, which I assume is George Washington. Sorry. Ilya's Honey, and Poetry Motel. Elisa Gabbert.
Okay, I'm going to start with this series of poems I wrote in April. A lot of poets actually across the country did this thing where we wrote a poem a day for National Poetry Writing Month, it's called. Simeon did it as well. So the poems I wrote constituted a series I called Blog Poems, and Chris posted them on his blog, as many of you know. And I'm going to start with some of those. This first one's called Blog Poem for April. You can't invent a color, only name it. Like how I just named those contrails Benjamin, and then the sky behind them Benjamin the Second. Now, retronymically, I refer to Ben as Ben One. If he becomes famous, they'll stop calling clouds clouds and call them nonlinear clouds or pre-Benjamin for clarity. I can think about fame all day and compose apologies for my friends' friends who I've variously snubbed, write them into emails with personalized PSs. PS, my love for you extends forever in all directions, or sometimes seems to. PS, I include a swatch of Edith Klein blue. PS, if the sky is a piano store and clouds are baby grands, we just hang out in the back and listen to a Casio tones pre-programs. P.S. This P.S. is my email's last will and testament. It's leaving everything to you. P.S. Like my love for you, like the infinite crystalline watch face of God of the sky, my email will never die. Okay, this one's called Blog Poem with Ellipses, and it starts with an ellipsis. I don't really know how to read that. You'll just have to trust me. Fixed my car, kind of missed the dent. When I see the anti-hole where it used to be, where do holes go to die? Their cemetery sure would seem a waste of space, all those graves of graves. Can't throw any of the dirt back in without crushing the holes to another death, so no one can mourn them again. Da, da, da. I've started practicing creative apathy. Can't spend all day in transit among various funerals. Everybody's got the same epitaph anyway. Was alive, is not. Tried to save life through not caring. Died bored. Ornithological blog poem. You will be woken by the chirping of the birds, which is the sound of their egos escaping from their bodies in loud and irregular streams. They are acupuncture birds, where the chirps fall on your eardrums corresponds to where you experience the pain. The birds have PhDs. They chirp out chapters from their dissertations. The birds do not agree that irony is dead. One of the birds has tried repeatedly to fall to its death, but always starts flying at the last second. The birds are excessively vain about their wings. They have been known to assemble themselves into bridges and other structures, an obelisk of feathers. Do not feed the birds. They are following a strict high-protein diet. The birds are control freaks. Do not, under any circumstances, try to touch their beaks. One of the birds has assumed a leadership role. Another bird is plotting. This was called Blog Poem after Walter Benjamin. Every time you reproduce a piece of art, you remove some of its aura, and that's why your mixtape didn't impress me much. It was so fucking auraless. But in the film version of the novelization of this poem, I play myself but have fantastic breasts, and there are probably some bloodbaths. And also, when my fangy tooth catches on my lip, men everywhere crumple with the ecstasy and agony of it. And really, who needs aura in your movie when you're so hot it breaks people's knees? Renaissance blog poem. Already today's sky is replacing yesterday's sky in my mind. It, like all skies, was an unforgettable sky, but nonetheless, I'm starting to forget it. As the sky comes cresting over yesterday's horizon like a monster wave, as it comes scrolling upward like film credits to tell us our new names, I can't rewind or skip back to my fave scenes of one wing flapping, one half of a white horse galloping. Like a lesser Michelangelo, my poem had inessential parts, so I rolled it down a great hill and they broke off. Now my poem is a sphere I hold in my palm. It's the size of a spider's eye. I cast it out into the wind. I know tomorrow the wind will blow me another one. On beauty. He thought stealing art might be a kind of art. Either the doing itself, a sleek performance, the pretense of stealth, but in truth an exhibition, or the aftermath, the spaces on the walls, a step beyond blank canvas, no canvas at all. But he found it was impossible. There was no art anywhere to steal, and in fact, there was no theft. It had all been done, a death of the aesthetics of crime. He could not create beauty through removal of beauty. It was already gone. The power of this struck him, the zeroness of art. Nothing could be more beautiful than nothing. The entire blank world, the raped museum. There can be no beauty for a thief, only the spectator, stunned and robbed. Viewfinder. Don't walk through the path of my blank stare. It will laze a hole in you. Incorporate your body into blankness. Nothing can come between us. me and the not blackness. Telephone wire across the parking lot, a line against the sky's unclouded plain. Where are they hiding their dimensions? They've gone Polaroid on empty window panes were slowly reified, settling at half their real sharpness, their real shades. Then a crow flew in and landed, scratched the surface of the image like a thumbnail. The bird mars it, the wind that makes the pole drift and quickens the wire. It starts to look alive, poltergeisted. It's taking something from me, sapping through the wick of my locked gaze. As I lose heart, I lose focus. Don't move. Don't touch it. Look away. Viewfinder. Don't walk through the path of my blank stare. It will laze a hole in you, incorporate your body into blankness. Nothing can come between us, me and the not blackness. Telephone wire across the parking lot, a line against the sky's unclouded plain. Where are they hiding their dimensions? They've gone Polaroid on empty window panes were slowly reified, settling at half their real sharpness, their real shades. Then a crow flew in and landed, scratched the surface of the image like a thumbnail. The bird mars it, the wind that makes the pole drift and quickens the wire. It starts to look alive, poltergeisted. It's taking something from me, sapping through the wick of my locked gaze. As I lose heart, I lose focus. Don't move. Don't touch it. Look away. This is called fugue/flight. What's with these geese always wandering around by the museum? It looks different at night. There were boats out here a few months ago when I gave Chris a ride to buy a bike from a pilot in the turnaround. The pilot was young. He said he hadn't been biking since his father died. My ears got cold, so I waited in the car. Chris came back with a pretzel. It's so empty here now, where the boats were, the pretzel stand. I'm standing in the ghosts of them. I wonder how old the geese are. Were they alive then? What do they want from the closed museum? Chris sold the bike. It was too small for him. What happened to the pilot, his father? This is called After I Subconsciously Plagiarized You. I don't know if you guys have been following this phenomenon, but I'm worried about it myself. After I subconsciously plagiarized you, I subconsciously burned the only copies of your manuscripts. I had no idea. I swear to you, I am not aware. There's no ghost in the machine. I don't know what I say, much less what I mean. My futurist mind Xeroxed your cliche 500 times and made it descend a staircase. Is that brilliant? If I take a photograph of you through this filter, the twinkle in your eye becomes a supernova. I'll snapshot your eye into a heat death. You're my muse, so I love you. Do you love me? Did you invent me? This one's called I Was So Drunk Last Night. I stood on the edge of the balcony to survey my kingdom. Dusk filtered, the tulips all seemed to be made of gold. I waved to them with cashmere socks on my hands, an improv against the cold. I was so drunk I woke up in the cedar chest. I couldn't stop smelling it. Wine deep, the memories of the forest. My forest. I have no idea where I left my bike. I was so drunk I became obsessed with the image of a miniature Doberman pincher seen through the latticework. And then a bike lying out by the pond, its pedals still gently spinning. Pedaled by the wind, by the drunken night. It was not my bike. Was it my dog? I put air quotes around everything I said. Everything I said was lyrical, Cyrillic nonsense. I tried to air write my alphabet. I was so drunk last night, I took a picture of your phone with my phone. I actually did that once. My phone was in love with your phone, called yours and hung up. Felt awful. I fell asleep and wasn't aware I was itching all over like crazy. Forgot where I left my body. I was so drunk I was nothing but body. I was sure I was surrounded by friends. I was so drunk. They had me surrounded. They told me to drop the mag light. I realized my friends are bees and can only love me by stinging me. Their attack was a kind of ecstasy. They attacked me to death, to sleep. Screenshot for Alan. Here's you. Here's your street. Now zoom out. Way out. That speck on the right-hand side by the scroll bar is me. Hanging on the coast, hiking around in the cold day air. Cerulean wind whipping at our faces with our own hair. Over the dunes, always more dunes. You would have said, why does it have to be so sandy? Since you weren't there, I said it instead. I wonder what you were doing then. Probably writing out equations on unlined paper in your fast, loopy hand. Something I couldn't comment on, except at this superficial level. How stupid of me to find your pencil marks sexy, to prefer them to the world, the huge freezing ocean. It does nothing for me. This gull wing jutting up out of the sand. Is there a bird down there, objecting, politely? Excuse me, world, I wasn't ready to be buried. The dream because love ends. The person I'm playing tennis with keeps changing back and forth between my brother and my ex-boyfriend. I hope this means nothing. I just miss them both. They make me feel fucking horrible. Some part of me knows it's 4 a.m. and I'm too weak to dive for a shot. My racket strings are on the verge of snapping gloriously like Achilles tendons. Alan wears the face from when we went apt hunting, and he called all the places in our price range Calcutta. As soon as I think of that, flying roaches enter from the west. My brother whacks at them with his old Wilson as they whiz by our ears at their disgusting frequencies, speed skating black figure eights against the dusty sky. We make a run for the pro shop, and soon enough, we're drinking orange soda on the couch like everything is okay. Alan drapes one of his long arms, his Hong Kong brown arms, piano hand arms, road hockey scarred elbow arms across my shoulder and says that everything is okay. On TV, they're showing footage from the courts, and it seems like we're still out there, man versus nature. I wonder out loud if it's some kind of joke, and one of them says, if it is, it's the saddest, the longest, the slowest, most beautiful joke you could tell. He doubles me over. He knows me so well.
Simeon sent me three versions of his bio. One, a short version, then the medium-sized version, and the full version. I'm going straight to the full version.
Oh, please don't.
Yes, absolutely. No. I think reading should be more, you should know the people up here. You know, it's just like so-and-so went to so-and-so, published in so-and-so. You know, but we're going to get to know soon. Simeon Barry was born in Guilford, Connecticut in 1973. At the dawn of time. And was educated at New College and Eckerd College. He received an MFA in poetry from Indiana University in 2001. He lives in Boston, where he is a poetry and fiction reader for Plowshares. He has won an Academy of American Poets Award, the Damon Award for Poetry, and a Career Chapter Award from the National Society of Arts and Letters. His work has been recently published in The Literary Review, Washington Square, New Orleans Review, Southern Poetry Review, Acme, Notre Dame Review, Crazy Horse, Passages North, Hayden's Ferry Review, Seneca Review, The Iowa Review, American Letters, I'm going, American Letters of a Temporary Commentary, and his forthcoming Chelsea, The Southeast Review, and Verse. 2005, this is the important stuff. In 2005, his manuscript, Ampersand Revisited, which may or may not be retitled, as it turns out, I learned over dinner, there were some disagreements, was a finalist for the Walt Whitman Award, the Carnegie Mellon Classic Contemporary Series, and the National Poetry Series. In 2006, he received the Massachusetts Cultural Council Individual Artist Grant. Simeon Barrett.
So, my name is Simeon, and I have a problem with long poems. I can admit that long poems control my life, and I keep writing them, so I'm powerless before them. And so I'd like to start with one. It's called Key Oblique, and it actually came from something that someone said to me in workshop. He said, I hate anaphora, because I use anaphora a lot in my poems, which is the repetition of a word or phrase at the beginning of a line or stanza. So anyways, here it is, Key Oblique. I hate anaphora. Yes. Anaphora hates us too, despite the lexical dignity of being late Greek, meaning to carry or branch. The repetition of a thing is hateful and too much itself, even for tercets, or a Tuesday when frost short circuits the window and you feed a whole cord of ennui into the fire. One might say this absurd thing cannot be repeated if one were, well, one. Two, update. By now, those tiny winged nocturnal beetles, name of Lampyridae, should be entering the poem, skidding, implicit, nothing to be made of their intermittence. By their wan light, we should be able to see the pod of pronouns darting through the kelp beds, or perhaps a martini glass of all waters and none, illumined by the bedside of every night we spent our plurals recklessly, waiting for glaciers to crash through the window and justify the shrift of frostbite we're wearing. We have to listen so hard for something so not our voice that it might very well be our voice. Three, no takebacks. The blood of the lamb doesn't have to be delivery or takeout, but the Hope Diamond might be submerged in my toilet tank, its cerebral curse drafting memos of more strange deaths. I don't want you to get the idea I'm not in this poem. I can lower my voice. I can repeat myself, give you the girl in frayed cutoffs on the breakwater, crushing grimed barnacles with her bare hands, the commas of unremarkable blood lost among the white shards. Now we're dressed for the weather of the oblique, archipelagos of chintzy motive, where rain recedes back into rain, where you already are what you were before. Four, disclaimer. At this point, you should tell me about the legendary tumor stuck like a wad of gray gum in your brain. Your urgency should crisp this page to a Roman scroll, one pardoning Lucretius for abstract bestiality, or one revoking Ovid's exile. You are free to include diagrams, advertisements, a hint of sepia for Baroque type selling tonics, or therapeutic electricity from wax-mustached men in Sweden. Orgasms, like tracks, should be free, and I would understand now if you had to leave or change the next scene to Zachariah's colloquy with a leper tribe of Akbar who were exceedingly wroth. Five, layaway. Since one needs nothing more than a flat affect to deny time, you've come to the middle of sixth grade, next to the dignified pencil drawings of the joy of sex. Because the past tense is inherently grave, this edition suits the slaying paper, the page numbers floating off to the left of their pleasure. The world. Pick. Catharsis or kilowatt. Coming is not unlike electrocution, although there tends to be a shorter menu. In this effaced camera angle, one could have the sperm burn your knuckles like white acid or evaporate instantly in a cheap B-movie effect. You think I have saved nothing. You're wrong. Your brother is asleep in the next bed. You're angry. You didn't know you had a brother. Six, detail. Men sleeping. We're charming when unconscious. Make us exotic, a coma where we know everything. The vagaries of disaster weather, the black swan scrabbling for purchase on the garret roof, the legacy of the garnet pin and why a velvet allergy means the girls can't be alone together. Make us drowned and we are lank and illegitimate, a seraphim's lack of birth control. We can finally listen, stay the whole night, and not worry if you discount our phosphorescence, the limelight of omen and grace. Seven, household tips. This poem is about to be called On Account of Darkness. I'm almost at the part where the 5,000-year-old tree is discovered to have an embryo tangled in its roots. And then, where will we be? I shall have to explain I am not pleasuring the unborn. I don't want you to have to sell your frisson for extra cash. If I tell you my uncle kept a vial of menstrual blood next to his heart, you'll understand why I fill this poem with bones, feathers, leaves, stones, nouns with vestigial adjectives, nouns that have never known an adverb's lisping touch. 8. Free with purchase. You take the typeface away from me, are petulant. Your ad-libs sound pre-rehearsed. You think we're done with blood, but I haven't shown you the handprint in AB negative above Heidi's bed. Heidi is non-union, and thus only asks, have you earned your red wings? You look around. We aren't mantled by bearskins or cursing the pockmarked stone of our knives. Heidi's Gucci sweater once had heroin spilled on it. But aside from that, this lyric is low-tech, an old-fashioned wood-burning lyric. The wings, you have put yourself in my place and check your shoulder blades for strange itches. You pick up cardinals hit by trains. You suspect I'm trying to avoid the place where Heidi's mammogram grows an onyx blotch beneath her nipple, but I want you to go there instead. 10. Answer key. I was moved. I did spend last night saddened that one could still come, could fluoresce and thrash and lift away into lessening, even with cancer's exponent obliquely raised to the superscript of agony in the body's space. But you're late. You think I've buried the red wings in the last section break, and that this poem is a greasy spoon in disguise, that each roseate pinion has been planted like a deadly perennial. And the balancing of hormonal books, in retrospect, in a lyric with no expiration date, and Babylon's impartial air without so much as a Tigris-Euphrates 7-10 split. 10. Hall pass. The margin. I like it there. The serrated place, the page torn from spirals, anywhere hard to get to, like Latvia or Kafka's castle. Forwarded mail arrives from Macedonia with river mud and tiny green crystals which act as crushed antidotes to lilac poisoning. My electric bill lists aubergine and 12.2 instances of recurrent light as charges. I get away with smoking weed due to the revision of cannabis smoke and the burnt odors clinging to Isaac's hair. And the Dresden firestorm is settled out of court and becomes a field of garish poppies, dazed with pollen. Let's lease the infinite, shall we? My abandonment complex is rent-controlled, and the iron nail I hold in my hand prevents the boy who suffocated on nitrous from touching my chest, no matter which double walks down the aisle of mythic overload. 11. Bill of sale. Here we examine the carboniferous Xerox of a diary. Here the italics become autonomous and will no longer take our calls. She came over. Things went further than I expected them to. Not quite the words of someone who will electrocute himself with a bass amp. Anyone who fits that much pathos into a dash has listened to Brahms, or at the very least, always meant to. Since we are good people, let him have a windy night, a dead relative's stopped watch, and an item of import to be named later. Let us assume that the decorum of a fugue state does not preclude a sense of timing, that a fast break is almost but not exactly the speed of molecules vibrating in a sheet of gold leaf. We can finally give the seraph its due. If you're going to keep doing that, I can't be held responsible for the consequences. 12. Caveat. You think only a person of weak character would use as much italics as I do. You think serious amounts of an opiate, any opiate, are required to keep me from addressing angelic personae in fitting rooms. My small talk might give way to, I have a serious aversion to sensuality, which manifests itself as violence. And if I don't, then I have disappointed you. I am boring. I say twist ties and read about piano tuners. A person like me would never pay your way to Hiroshima or show you how it could be like lightning in hell when it doesn't go to ground right away. I hedge. I rattle off my measurements like serial numbers, 36, 24, 36. I keep my neuter status. 13. A short interlude. It's very bright in here, isn't it? 14. Local of attractions. This pronoun is 76 degrees and reflects everything. We have to work from the inside out. Here, on Key Oblique, an Egyptian scent of raw ginger and oil trembles in the air. There's a special on social lubricant, 2 for 1. We must leave behind stitched animals. the porcelain homunculi who are summarily cute. We are present and tense. We French kiss the word mall. I'll be petite and you'll be grand. We're singed. We think cadenza is sexy. Break this collective and you can have our unconscious, even though we're made strange by storm weather. Flapped it. There is no millimeter in this kiss. But when we split into I and thou, there's a musk that floats this proposition. Pneuma, the breath of life the ancients felt, the wind that blows where it will. It's called Chemotherapy Omnibus. This is the last place. Semis bellow like minotaurs coming off Tampa Bay, pausing over trilobites in mass graves and their scribbled carapaces. In 1980, a tanker took out the bridge in the night, and cars kept driving off the rain into erasure. Yesterday on the beach, a young girl stepped on a stingray's vague shadow, and I watched the paramedic as he hummed Chopin's Dr. Gratus to steady his membraned hands. I watched how he narrowed and shrank like a lens over the child's light. I make the coin in his loafers a penny dreadful. I take this agony, this awkward bent. The stand-in on my bondage calendar regards her square knots with contempt. Her bound ambivalence helps me read Lamia, etc. Keats was a wimp. He agonized for weeks trying to get his heroine in the Eve of St. Agnes to undress until his versions of her were an autistic hourglass drizzled with moonlight. I think he couldn't help always wanting her there, looking over her shoulder at the sex and death forbidden by the edge of the text. In Shell's study, across the hall, the radio lapses into solar flares. She didn't sleep well, kept turning into me with a hot, unconscious hiss. She's taped her x-rays to the bathroom mirror, so the first thing she sees in their morning is their grainy surveillance photo white. She writes Marie Curie into her journal, seeing her hand reproduced endlessly with poisonous ease. I prefer Mad John floundering in the bloody sea, Revelation's mood lighting. I think of him when the sluggish canals gutter out at twilight. Glory on the main line, Apocalyptica. She thinks John is shrill, that he fell in love with his end. I'm not so sure. I think this world is not pleasant. The world is the small signature of a knife on the table, a lemon leaking yellow cells onto the chopping board. Last week, after cutting her calf shaving, she stared a long time at the red bracket, then looked up at last week's shot languishing on the mirror, the tiny gray torus on her lung. That's me, minus everything. Ira Correll, 1. The music room was the chamber under the street where you'd spread your hands on the scored wall, see the marks of fingernails from others trying to hold themselves up. An air compressor in the background, screaming on until the black hood added others, singing, voices, a firing squad's report. Take away sugar and oxygen, and the brain can't tell the difference between Bach tuning up and an autopsy's offhand sounds. 9 hours of garbled scripture, a doppelganger choking on his tongue. Nothing you could carry out of there. No scar like them burning off your nipples with an iron, scraping your finger bone with needles. Only the inhuman edge of doubled voices saying, your daughter's at the bottom of a bog, infant son buried in a coal bin. Every coda coming back to Sir Edward's elegant report. Cruelty implies a disposition to inflict suffering, coupled with indifference to or pleasure in the victim's pain. We do not think that happened here. 2. Kevin had it right. A revolutionary is a dead man on leave. A death wish, even one raw as whale oil, is boring. Winters, my old snapped ankle keeps me half awake. Its nightmare twinge like sonar coming up from the sewers, bringing back tunnels choked with bone, human, rat, and dog mixed in, scraping the ceilings with their ball joints. The kind of vision you get from an underground church. They had us wrap a 45 in rosary beads, leased us posh spots in the liturgy. Said grace was not the bootlace around Gerald's throat in the alley, but the cold that clotted his slashed wrists just in time. How can you talk to men who are screaming through keyholes in their heads? No skeleton exactly fits the lock. Books can't hold the girl thrown over the bridge during the Civil Rights March, the men who work her with spiked clubs, denying the mercy of drowning in shallow water, Even poetry's easy say, it was the river Fawn that killed me. 3. If there are slums in the shining city, they'd be ours. Never mind the amethyst throne, the seraphim like spectators at a football match. This is Belfast. Too much riding and the Brits seal off whole blocks with CS gas. Oven cleaner. Days like that, doors shut against fog, half plague, half chalk from damned blackboards. All those hours, bored teaching catechism, I could see how St. Peter might send the odd crib death here. The not quite born, with voices thin as a tin cup. Patience weather, Da would say. 6 weeks since Sean went walking, and a paratrooper in a passing truck took off most of his head with a rubber bullet. At 8 feet, you just airbrush the skull away. And Brenda says Liam's for it. 3 days. Run with the IRA and eventually your spine's going to grow rope. They let a journalist in to ask him the obvious. How do you feel about hanging? Liam was grateful, quietly foregone. The mist will be cleared away. Finally, I'd like to close with the last section of my last poem, which is actually the title poem of my manuscript, you know, whether or not it's retitled. This is section 9. Yes, this is the last room, shaded by a vast decision tree. You can see the scars on the bark where the branches have been torn away. The word that burns in your mouth is Cicatrix. You like it for the X alone. You have never said it aloud, like most of the words you know. When you die, there will still be thousands shrunk in their opalescence. Intimate means not having the power of speech, which should only apply to animals, not poems, or the humans powering them. Every time you enter, the tree is different. This branch grew from the first pornographic magazine you hid in the earth, from placing that hysterical text below ground. The tendency of living things is to become more complex, to needlessly multiply possibilities or entities. So the snapshots of duplicate pink have complicated into chrysalis and stem. The ground beneath the tree is lit by white orchids, these botanical accidents where animals spilled their seed. And the victims of the permissive river congregate nearby, sipping from their cognates, the extravagant waters of those words related by blood. They are low and quiet, a stylish murmur. It's a homonym thing. You must choose. On one side, you have those who hate their initials, who have spoken for you out of their small letters, and come and wept and remembered what they put into their bodies and where all the etymologies are buried. On the other, you have the dead, still dressed in the diffident voltage they had in life. They have grubbed for Latin roots, flickered back and forth between sexes, like film stars overlaid in monochrome cairns on the cutting room floor. Both have entered each stanza with their loves intact, with the black pearls of their obsession setting off their eyes, and the hollow of their necks and wrists brushed with concern. You are terribly afraid they have become the same waiting for you. They domesticate the orgasm with fact, illuminating the 25 million spectral asterisks that expire with each muffled groan. They sterilize the trope with quotes, with Anita Bryant's theory of sexual essence. Homosexuals are the way they are because the sperm they swallow is the most concentrated form of life. You have almost forgotten who does what. The resonance on either side of the denouement is wrong, which is what keeps the error ethereal, unable to live or die, like everyone else in this room. We have not all slept together, nor have we been changed, as Paul wished. But there is consolation in figures, in the event horizon, in the wedding that won't. The bride in the bathroom, vomiting because she took too many painkillers to smooth things out. And the groom using a joint to wrap an old scarf of smoke and amnesia around himself in the rain blowing in from the porch. And Will, the one who's no longer here, who is dismantled into imagistic pixels, sits on the edge of the stage with the bride's 8-year-old daughter, who was wiping glitter from her cheekbones with the heels of her hands, as if a small miracle had blown up in her face. He is trying to explain the sophisticated nature of the damage that two people can choose, and why it all seems alike from the outside. She is looking at him out of the multiplied light near her eyes, and he is transitioning, like weather, into the grace of the past tense, which is classy and composed. A style subject to no argument but its own.
Our last reader is David Daniel. I have, besides this bio, I had two thoughts about David Daniel. One was when I was looking to go to Emerson College, I was looking to find books by faculty, and I found a chapbook called The Quick and the Dead, and it was one of the reasons I came to Emerson, besides the fact that they were the only one that let me in. But it was one of the reasons I was interested in Emerson. The other was when his first full-length collection came out, Seven Star Bird, and I saw the words Harold Bloom on the back, and I was like, holy shit, Harold Bloom knows where Emerson College is. David Daniel was raised in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. For the last decade, he has been poetry editor of the Literary Journal, Flowershares. He taught literature and poetry writing at Emerson College in Boston for many years. More recently, he was on the faculty of the Fred A. Dickinson Low Residency MFA program in Madison, New Jersey, and he is now the director of the undergraduate creative writing program at FDU. His first full-length collection, Seven Star Bird, was published in October 2003 by Grey Wolf Press and distributed by Farrar, Straus, and Giroux. David has been called by Harold Bloom an authentic heir to Hart Crane. His poems, essays, and reviews have appeared widely in numerous journals, including Ogni, Harvard Review, The Literary Review, Post Road, and Witness. He was also president and co-founder of the first independent part-time faculty union in the East, the Affiliated Faculty of Emerson. He received degrees from Vanderbilt, Johns Hopkins, UVA, where he was a Hoynes Fellow. David is also a songwriter. David Daniel.
Thanks, Chris. Thank you all. It's really been a pleasure to hear the poems. I unfortunately, I couldn't find the new poems that I wanted to bring. So some of you who were at BU a couple weeks ago and hear some of the same ones, and I apologize. I didn't want to do that. It turns out that the wreck of my room is exactly equivalent to the wreck in my computer. I was wondering how I could do that. I mean, it's like it's stacked up in piles. But I'm just going to read three poems that were supposed to be just fun for the most part. The last one, less so. And this one's called Rock and Roll. You may need to know a few things. Unfortunately, John Doe and X-Sing Cervenka aren't well known enough. They fronted the great LA punk band called X, and they're still around in various forms if you don't know them. Los Angeles, by the way, is a city where it doesn't rain every day. Bon Scott, lead singer briefly for AC/DC. Willie Loman from Death of a Salesman ended badly. This is a midlife crisis poem, and Dante himself had a midlife crisis poem that was called The Inferno. And started via midway in the journey of my life, I found myself lost in a dark wood. If you know the image of what Freud looked like when he died after he lost the bottom part of his face to cancer, that'll help sort of fix some of the stuff. Rock and roll. Wildly in love, in 1987 Los Angeles, John Doe and X-Sing Cervenka gather at a microphone and howl, I'm lost, headed down the highway. In 1979, all over the world, Bon Scott of AC/DC shouts his anthemic Highway to Hell in reference to Milton's Satan of Paradise Lost, Book 2, as Satan stands lost, staring into the abyss of chaos and old night, with whom he bargains, etc., etc. Henceforth, and before forth, really, all lost highways lead to hell, and everyone rides them, at least for a while. These are funny to me too. Willie Loman says, to be 30 and lost in America, the greatest country in the world, is a disgrace. Of course, it's grace itself that may be the problem, as Willie learns himself soon enough. If Dante were approaching midlife today, lost in some dark wood, one wonders if he'd simply buy a car and, heading down the highway, blast classic rock. Many of the lost buy Porsches, if they can. The fired-up descendant, I bought a lot of it's gone now. Many of the lost buy Porsches, if they can, the fired-up descendant of Hitler's vision of the people's car, the Volkswagen Beetle, engineered by Ferdinand Porsche himself, based on Hitler's sketch. The quintessential car of the summer of love, driven by Dean Stockwell, close friend of Neil Young, in The Love Bug. Dean, a beautiful American by all accounts, was a junkie and very lost. 1994, Kurt Cobain of Nirvana could rock with the best of them and was himself a terrible disgrace. A guitar is like a gun, is like a cock, is like a mic. Simple stuff, says Dr. Freud, whose mouth in the end looked like Kurt's after he, very lost, stuffed a mic down his throat, growled a few remarkably expressive growls, and pulled the trigger. This is called the sonnet. God, I love sonnets. I think of them every day. Just as I think of my father, who was, in fact, a sonneteer. He wandered 12th century France or Italy, wherever grief fogged such things, his huge head full of song. God, I miss him. But he clearly wasn't meant for war. They say he stood up in the trenches to recite poems in the enemy's direction. Love, you know, love. Then the red laser sight light found his forehead, reminding his commander for a moment of a beautiful Indian woman he wished to love. Bang, bang. Sometimes love is like that. Just as you reach for it, it runs away, or else it puts a bullet in your head. This may, of course, be the wrong kind of love. Thank you. Sonnets are as mathematical as music, as elegant and sensible as the universe. And God, I love music. It was, I think, Pythagoras who, in the birthplace of democracy, sort of, hearing the harmonies of a blacksmith's hammer, determined that pleasurable resonance grew from metal slabs bearing precise fractional relations, and thus, for the first and only time, discovered a physical truth of an abstract notion. Despite many attempts, despite even the mighty sonnet, love remains adrift. Anyway, sonnets, like the universe, are ruled by just six numbers, metaphors, really. Galaxies spin according to them, neutrinos blink and whirl, matter collapses, they suckle us in some stellar nursery, deliver gravity to break our hearts, hearts filled with love, love and blood, the better kind of love. Now, I know it would have been clever if this had been a sonnet, a double sonnet, or some such. Yes, well, I'll leave that to my sons, who miss me already. They were very busy mapping out our future in the glowing digital domain. There will be conquests and certainty, end stops, and it won't be long now. They have the tools. They have the proofs. Ornaments. Bring down your ornaments. Bring down the attic dust. Bring down the leaves, the husks of insects, the grease from windows. Bring down the clothes. Shovel them. Shovel them over the bodies you long ago brought down. Bring down the silver, the screaming, the cries of love. Bring them down and beat them. Bring them down to the street, take a broom and beat them. Let the dust live in the sun shaft. Bring down their tiny planets. Beat them. Free them. Those bodies. You wanted them once. You asked for them. Now bring them down. Bring down everything you've wanted, shattered or soiled. Some flag. Some country you loved once. Bring them some country you loved once, some child you lost. Bring them down and beat them. Down to your streets and beat them. There is peace in it. There is peace in the beating. And bring down the poems you wrote, those strong feelings, the voice you had, so sweet, that beauty too, its lies, those centuries collapsed, of stoop, of musky stone. There was such promise then, such future. Bring them down to your streets, take out a broom, and beat them. The dust will catch fire in the sun shaft. It will light that light. Excuse me. It will burn it. Bring down those angels of glass, that hell, those whispers in your ear. They say bring down the shame they died in, the suicide's longing, the bloody sheet, the first hard cock, then the mother's skittish love, the hazel of her eyes. Bring them all down. Bring them down to your streets and beat them. Bring down your fathers too. Bring down how they drank and drank, how they beat you with their drinking, and the wars they took you to, how you sat there cheering so long ago, centuries now. Now you must take them out to the street, drive them like mules to the street, and beat them, so you can take down the house itself, sweep off its skin, its muscle, to get to its gallery bone, to its teeth, then tie a string to the doorknob, slam shut the door, and bring them all down. Pull out the floor, the windows, the walls, the twisted nails, the light that held them all. Then, finally, the door. Bring them all down into your streets, take out your broom, and beat them. There is peace there. When the dust rises in the light of the sun, it will come alive. It will take your shape, sparkling, adorned. It will rise over streets now filled with you, over the villages, the cities now filled with you. Its eyes are your eyes, and it follows you in wonder. It will bless you. It will look you in the eye and bless you.